Welcome to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. Dr. Levine, internal medicine, and is ready to take your calls at 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI. You can listen to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on the air, online at KLVI.com, or on your phone with the free iHeartRadio app. Now, here's Dr. Levine.
Welcome, Southeast Texas Internet Radio listeners. This is your weekly host, Dr. Levine. Welcome to another edition of the Dr. Levine Medical Hour. I am here between 8 and 9, typically, at the studios of KLVI here in Beaumont, Texas, live, taking your phone calls about medicine and healthcare. Phone lines are open, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. KLVI, we're here to discuss health and wellness to try and make it easier for you to figure out what's best for you and your family. And maybe if you have some physical symptom that's nagging you and you haven't quite got to the bottom of it, you can call us and we can talk about it and see if we can give you some direction on what's your next step as we all sort of come out of this COVID-19 pandemic. Man, I think I don't want to speak too soon, but I think we're good with the pandemic. A lot of social interaction without mask wearing, mask protection, and there does not seem to be a massive uptick in cases. We still want folks to get their vaccines and get their boosters if you qualify, but I think we're good. And I'm sort of looking forward to the time where we can probably remove our masks in the office. We're still wearing those in the office. I guess we want to make sure that everything is quiet before we do that. But we're getting kind of close. Some of the local hospitals have lightened up their mask wearing recommendations and giving a little bit more freedom to healthcare professionals to not have to wear a mask. In certain settings, it's certainly not a zero mask wearing environment at this point, but it seems like if things stay quiet, we're certainly heading to that point. So I'm excited about that. I'm sure you are as well, but not much obviously has changed. There's always conversations and chatter surrounding the pandemic about various topics. There's so much to talk about with the pandemic. We could talk all day about it. So, but nothing major has really changed other than the fact that things seem to be pretty quiet at this point. And more than likely, we're sort of at the end of this pandemic in the sense of having to worry about massive surges and quarantining and shutting down businesses and you can go out in public without mask wearing, things like that. So what we knew before the pandemic started, 2019, it's 2 years ago. It's amazing when you think about it that that's sort of when it started. It's been 2 years later, and time has flown by significantly. But I think we're good. So we'll keep you posted on that. Each week that we come and talk about that. But anyway, while we wait on some phone calls, I'll launch into some topics of interest I feel like maybe we can talk about. As you know, if you don't know, I'm a primary care physician. Internal medicine is what my degree is in, sort of like an adult pediatrician. And what I do mainly is every day try and place patients in a position to live longer, help them make better decisions, and obviously screening for cancers. And screening for cardiovascular disease is something that we spend a lot of time doing in primary care, whether it be blood work, x-rays, We're now using ultrasounds in our office to try and catch diseases at an early stage so we can do more about it and there's less harm. And one of the things that has changed over the past couple of years is the time we start colon cancer screening. When I came out, the pretty much general recommendation for the general population, and really all that means is assessing risk of colon cancer. There are families that have a high presence of colon cancer in their family, meaning maybe the father, the mother, or sister or brother has had colon cancer at an early age. And early for doctors would be anything prior to 50 years old, was the old thinking. Now they're starting to screen colon cancer earlier for the general population. And the general population would just be anybody in general. There's necessarily no family history. Nobody's ever been diagnosed with anything. So that's sort of the general population and a general risk. Certainly, like I say, if cancers run in your family, in particular colon cancer, you would be more of a higher risk. And your colon cancer screening might start even sooner than 45 years of age. And sort of the way we approach patients who have a family history that is high risk, let's say your father was diagnosed at 42 or 40, or your mother was diagnosed at 39, the current recommendation, as I understand it, is we would start 10 years prior to that date. So if, again, your mother was diagnosed at 39, we would start screening you at 29 years of age for the sister or the brother versus the general population. We used to start at the age of 50. Now, the current guidelines indicate that for general population, no family history, we start screening at the age of 45. So if you're 45 and above and listening out there, you've not had your colon cancer screening, certainly bring it up to your healthcare professional. And go in and discuss colon cancer screening. The other thing that has changed, and that's not really a new thing, it's kind of an old thing, but when I came out, the way to screen for colon cancer was one of two things. One was what they call an occult stool card. And it was normally one or two cards, and your practitioner would send you home with them, and or they would do it there in the office when they did a rectal exam. They would try to get a piece of your stool on a glove, just put it on the card, and to check for the presence of blood, there was a stool occult card. And if that was positive, then they would tell you, you need to go get a colonoscopy. That sort of fell out of favor as we realized that patients with colon cancer, the cards are not always positive, such that you could have a negative stool card but still have colon cancer. So that sort of fell out of favor, or just wasn't recommended over a full colonoscopy. When I was coming out, there was also what they call a flex sigmoidoscopy, flex sig for short, which, again, gastroenterologists do these procedures. And when I was coming out, they were even sort of starting to train non-gastroenterology practitioners to do them just because they knew the need was there and they needed to sort of allow other practitioners to learn how to do these procedures. So I was trained to do flex sigs when I was coming out of residency. And basically, this is the same thing as a colonoscopy, but you don't view the entire colon. You only view half of the colon, and that's the left side. So the right side of the colon, because if you look at the colon, it's almost like an upside down U. So you have a left and a right and a middle. And with a flex sigmoidoscopy, we would only visualize the left side of the colon because at that time we thought that's where high percentage of cancers were, was on the left side of the colon. So that's where we would look. and wouldn't find anything. And we would say, hey, you're good. But not visualizing the entire colon, you could have a cancer that's in that transition zone or on the right side of your colon. So we had to sort of throw that away and just do full colonoscopies, became the standard of care. Just as I was coming out, this is all happening as I was coming out 20 years ago. Can you believe it? But colonoscopies sort of became the gold standard. So you hit the age of 50, we recommended you go to the GI doctor to get a colonoscopy. And that was sort of how it was handled for many years. And just recently, other than being screened at the age of 45, just recently, as you know, with insurance atmosphere the way it is, the third party payers, as they're called, the insurance companies, have gotten more and more aggressive about making sure things are happening in their eyes in terms of if they're going to pay the bill, then they want to make sure that certain things are happening at the visit. And over the years, they've just gotten more and more aggressive about trying to make that happen. They're not necessarily rude. They're polite about it, but they are just sort of, their tentacles are spreading more and more inside your office in terms of paperwork and recommendations about things that they think should happen, maybe medicines that the patient should be on based on their profile of the patient that they have in their system. As you may or may not know, a lot of these insurance companies are hiring mid-levels like nurse practitioners to go out to your house maybe once a year, twice a year, talk, you know, come to your house, do an exam, talk to you, go over your meds, go over your screening, almost very similar to what I do, but it's obviously in a more relaxed personal environment, which I think is a great idea. They still sort of refer you back to your healthcare professional to sort of get these things done. So then they're not really there to interrupt the care they're getting from their primary care physicians. They're actually just trying to help for now. And I think it's a great idea, and it helps everyone just increase the awareness of things that may have been overlooked. It increases the conversation of screening because not everybody wants to be screened for all these cancers. Cancer screening is a shared decision-making arena, meaning they have guidelines and the guidelines are updated probably every 2 years or so in terms of whether or not they recommend, like just like with colon cancer, adjusting the time you start or changing the type of screening test that they recommend. So things are always changing, and having these practitioners come out in a more relaxed session, because again, when you go to your healthcare professional, it's a little bit pressured, you know, but you have to wait. And then the healthcare professionals, a lot of times running behind. So the visit is sort of pressured and there's a lot of fast talking, and then that's done. Almost like an amusement park ride. There's a lot of waiting and a very short burst of excitement, then it's over with. And, you know, we're really trying to work hard to do better and have a more relaxed visit. Betty, good morning. You're live. How can we help you?
Good morning, Dr. Levine. Thank you for taking my call this morning. I'd like to ask you a question, twofold pretty much. What causes your blood to become thick, and is there anything other than medication you can kind of avoid, certain things you consume to cause this issue? And another is, when you are putting out 80% of functioning, what direction are your kidneys in at that point?
All right, so two questions. The issue with blood being thick, I would assume what that means is that maybe someone formed a blood clot when they shouldn't have formed a blood clot. That's normally what patients mean when they say their blood is thick. Or sometimes the amount of blood in your body is very high, and sometimes that's what people mean when they say their blood is thick. So it's two different problems, but we do see them, and it does happen very commonly. If you're forming blood clots, For the most part, and this is a very simple, quick answer, we normally place patients on blood thinners, and we do an evaluation to figure out why their blood is clotting spontaneously. That's number one, and it's a very common problem. Number two, your issue with kidney function, 80% actually, in my opinion, would be considered a good percentage of kidney function, 80%. When it starts going down to 50 or 40 or 30, that's what we call CKD, or chronic kidney disease. And for most patients in this country, it's going to be from high blood pressure, diabetes. That's it. I mean, there are some other more rare causes of kidney diseases, like autoimmune diseases like lupus, or maybe there was a medication that was given to you and it injured you, kind of like anti-inflammatory medicines can do that, like Motrin, Advil, Aleve. Nonetheless, it damages your kidneys. The damage is permanent and your kidney function declines. And you know what? I almost forgot one of the other more common causes of chronic kidney disease is just aging. As we get older, the kidney function declines. So we're starting to pick up a lot of that on labs now. Patients are coming in for routine visits. We do lab, and the kidney function is a little low, or it's not normal. It's a little below normal, and we're having to have that conversation with patients about that, and they get alarmed because they think it automatically means dialysis, which it doesn't. But just so everybody knows, as you get older, 60, 70, 80, your kidney function declines, and we can see that on lab. It doesn't mean you're going to go to dialysis. But nonetheless, a lot of people can function with a kidney percentage of 50, 60, 40, 30, and do fine. It's the doctors, nephrologists, which are kidney specialists. We know how to manage those patients with medications. We know what to look out for, and we can manage them very successfully without having to initiate hemodialysis. So That's sort of how, that's a very quick, basic answer about your blood being thick and kidney problems when the percentage is that function, 80%, which to me sounds pretty good. I really wouldn't be concerned at all. When you get on dialysis, your percentage of kidney function is like 10% or less than 10%. Okay. So that's a far distance from having to be on dialysis. And like I say, even in patients whose function is 10%, they're obviously going to have a lot of symptoms. Their pressure is normally going to be very high, maybe nausea, loss of appetite. Their blood system will start to change. Their calcium phosphorus levels will start to change. They become very anemic. You can develop a lot of acid in your bloodstream. This is at more 10% or so when things are really almost starting to shut down, meaning no function at all. And even in that, even at that stage, patients are alive. They're talking, they're walking. They just don't feel good, right? They know something's wrong. And that normally prompts them to go into the hospital and we diagnose it and get them on some dialysis. So, and everyone, gets terrified with dialysis. And I can understand that. But patients tolerate dialysis pretty well these days. Okay. And so.
Okay. Now, one other thing, Dr. Levine, with the how much water, I mean, I had a daughter, she was taking some prednisone. She came down with something in pneumonia, and they given her some prednisone, and that's what caused her kidneys to kind of, she had some swelling in her right leg, what have you. And she's, kind of reluctant to drink and too much water. How much water could she consume a day? How many 16 ounces of water or 8 ounces she can drink a day?
You said she's on dialysis?
No, sir. She's not on dialysis. She went to the hospital. She was on prednisone and the prednisone started messing with her kidneys, and she wouldn't, her leg, right leg began to swell in the foot, the leg part. And so she went to the emergency room and they told her to not drink, only drink 8 ounce and a half of water, a bottle of water a day.
Mm-hmm.
So is that kind of less than what she need to drink, or she need to drink more than that?
The amount of fluid that a person needs to drink every day is controversial. And okay. My position on that is your body wants to be hydrated. Okay. And there's a fail-safe system that your body has that keeps itself hydrated. And the way it does that is if it's under hydrated, you become thirsty.
Okay.
And your body will tell you, please go drink some water or please go drink something. And you go drink it, and the thirst desire goes away and your body's happy. And that's really the most basic answer I can give you is your body will tell you when you're thirsty. Okay. And when you're thirsty, then you go drink. But you don't necessarily. Okay. And I know that there's an overabundance of recommendations out there to just drink ad nauseum all day long. You know, have your bucket of water next to you and just drink. And I sort of understand where that comes from. But the human body basically tells you when it's ready for hydration. You just get thirsty and you drink, and that's all you got to do. I don't think you have to prioritize just drinking all day long, unless there's some medical problem going on. Your doctor said, hey, you're dehydrated. We want you to drink a lot of water for a day or two. Okay, fine. But just for the average person every day, you know, you don't have to overconsume all this fluid every day. Your body will tell you. And depending on who you're talking to, if you know, it's your primary care doctor, the ER doctor, a dietitian, you're going to sort of get different opinions about how much to drink. From my standpoint, just let your body tell you and then, you know, drink something. My point of view is, when you drink, try to drink something without sugar in it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Levine. You helped me so much today. And always listening is a pleasure. And thank you so much for what you do for us.
My pleasure, Miss Betty. You have a good evening. And those were some great, great questions. I mean, I could spend hours talking about all those different topics. But thank you for those calls or those questions, Betty. Anyway, I'll take my first break. Phone lines are open, 896-KOVI, 1-800-330-KOVI. Give us a call. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
All right, welcome back to home. This is Dr. Levine, Dr. Levine Medical Hour. Taking your phone calls. Phone lines are open. Give us a call. We'd love to talk to you. 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. I had some, let me talk about the colon cancer screening and our kind of talk a little bit more about some of the questions we just had. But again, the big thing is at the age of 45, we do recommend you initiate general population colon cancer screening. And again, colonoscopies used to be pretty much the only modality that we were using. And if you've never had a colonoscopy, it's a little involved, meaning you have to spend a little time doing that. And that's why I sort of brought in the insurance company aspect is, you know, they are monitoring doctors and doctors' offices in terms of their performance and what they're doing. They're not being rude about it at this point. But they sort of want certain things to happen, and one thing that they want to happen is they want patients to get their screening done on a regular basis. And I can tell you just from day by day talking with patients, there's a lot of obstacles to getting things done on a regular basis, whether it be your doctor's office, whether it be you, whether it be the office we're referring you to. There are just a lot of obstacles that can sort of delay your ability to get these tests done. So we're trying to make things easier and more convenient so that you're more likely to be screened and diagnosed day one versus in a couple of years. We sort of got a taste of this with the pandemic in terms of getting vaccines out to patients. The more convenient you make vaccines or acquiring vaccines, the higher percentage patients will get the vaccine. So it's no different with screening. We're talking about colon cancer screening. So getting a colonoscopy, it's a bit cumbersome. So it's a big obstacle, I guess, is the bottom line. A lot of people don't like to get colonoscopies. A lot of people, when you get a colonoscopy, you have to sort of take off from work. You have to drink the solution the night before in order to sort of clean your colon out. You're given some slight sedation during the colonoscopy. So it's almost like 24 hours you sort of have to shut down everything in order to get this test performed just for screening. And a lot of people just found reasons to not do it or couldn't do it for good reasons. And so thus the ability to meet those guideline recommendations were very low. And so they have come out with a sort of home stool kit. And you've probably seen some commercials on TV. The brand name is called Cologuard. I'm sure others will come out. But as it stands right now, the brand name is called Cologuard. The little box, that's a little friendly box that's running around smiling. That's what I primarily use in my office. Again, because it's extremely convenient. And I've been doing this for 20 years. And since I've been using the convenient stool card kit that comes to your house in the mail, a high percentage of my patients will say yes. Whereas years ago when I would tell them, okay, you're 50, it's time for colonoscopy, there would just be a lot of humming and maybe and I don't know and let's set it up. But then I'd come back 4 months later, well, I haven't had a chance to get it. Something happened. I don't want to do the prep. Just all these reasons for not doing it. And so now they have these stool kits that your practitioner can mail to your house and you process it yourself and then you send it back yourself. Very convenient, very easy to do. And there are videos, there's websites that you can go to that the company Cologuard offers you. There's phone numbers all over the box. So It's extremely easy if you don't know how to do it. They tell you how to do it from step one to step five, and there's not a lot of steps. But I found that this test is extremely more convenient and more people accept this, and you're able to get your screening performed and meet those requirements that have been put out, you know, by these regulatory agencies. Now, certainly if you – and let me back up. This is for general screening. So there's no family history of colon cancer. You've never had colon cancer. You're not having any abnormal symptoms. So again, in order to be a candidate for these stool kits, really nothing has to be going on. It's just you're 45 and it's time. But if there's anything going on, you're having bleeding in your stool, you're losing weight, you're having abdominal pain, if there's any sort of abnormal aspect of what's going on with your history, then you're not a candidate for the stool kit, okay? Because you need a colonoscopy anyway. You got to look. Something's wrong, and the stool kit cannot see that sort of stuff, so you need a colonoscopy anyway. So it's got to be for just plain Jane. You're 45. It's time to get screened. And so go ahead and do that. And we do that stool kit every 3 years. And according to the current information, the current medical literature, these stool kits are very sensitive, meaning they pick up on the cancer if you do have it there in your colon, which is why it's a good option right now. So talk with your healthcare professional about getting that done. And it's kind of crazy because even though it's at your home, it's easier. Some people sort of, they get it. And they stare at it for several weeks, several months, like, I know I need to do that. And they just leave it over there like, you know, like it's a little gremlin. They don't want to touch it. They're looking at each other, staring each other down every day. You know, just because you have to have a BM in this container and you have to sort of process a little bit. So people are getting very close and friendly to that part of their anatomy. And some people just don't like that. So there is a little trepidation initially with some patients I've found. We sort of have to keep reminding them to do the stool kit, but eventually, you know, they will do it. So, again, that's the big thing with colon cancer screening starting at the age of 45, but it's become very convenient when it comes to getting that screen. Now, if you want a colonoscopy, you don't want to do a stool kit, you know, obviously go ahead and get your colonoscopy. Just let your practitioner know, and that can get you a referral to the local gastroenterologist and, you know, get your colonoscopy. Or let's say you start with the stool kit, but something changes. This has happened before. The stool kit's negative, and then patients come in a month later, 2 months later, now they're bleeding. Are they having abdominal pain? Then we'll send them to the gastroenterologist for further workup, and normally a colonoscopy will be done in the proper setting. And at this point, I haven't been surprised. And what I mean by that is, like, I've had a patient who had a negative stool kit, and then 6 months later, something happens. They get diagnosed with colon cancer. I haven't had that happen to this point. Could that happen? Sure. But it's going to be a pretty rare situation. That's the only reason we're using these stool kits. Again, in the proper setting, someone with no risk factors, just I'm 45, it's time to get screened. That's when we do the stool kit. Now, if there's strong family history, there's anything going on, we don't do the stool kits. We go ahead and see into the gastroenterologist. Anyway, I'll go on my second break. Phone lines are open, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
All right, welcome back to the Dr. Levine Medical Hour. Give us a call. Phone lines open, 896-KLVI, 1-800-330-KLVI. This earlier question about water or how much to drink, you know, you hear about that periodically. Everyone's trying to live as long as possible and be as healthy as possible. And so many recommendations out there from health gurus, whether it be online, on TV, books. I mean, it's just, it's amazing about all of this information. And that's one thing that does come up often is just water drinking. And I know for many years, that maybe a preoccupation with staying hydrated and water drinking. And everyone knows that person that has the big mega jug, then they just fill it up with water and they just drink water all day. And we all know that person. And so I get that question periodically, just, well, how much should I drink? You know, what's the truth? And as I was telling this earlier caller, some, you know, if you're working with your healthcare professional and there's some disease or there's some problem that you have that requires you to drink a lot of water, then I obviously have no problem with that. That's not a very common scenario. We see a lot of true dehydration issues as we enter the summer, and just people are sweating more, obviously because of heat, and the body, in trying to cool itself, will tend to sweat. And when you sweat, you lose a little fluid when that happens. And certainly if you're working in the plants, or you're working on the road outside, or you're cutting grass or whatever it is you're doing outside in the heat, you're going to sweat a lot more, and your chance of becoming dehydrated will start to escalate. We traditionally, when the summer hits, we get this spike of severe dehydration cases that come through the ER, and these are typically workers that have to work outside in the heat, whether it be roofing or road working. Are the, you know, the chemical plants out, you have to be in the heat all day. That even though patients take breaks, they can still sweat excessively enough to generate some loss of hydration or some loss of fluid. That's basically what dehydration means, is the balance of fluid is now low versus normal, and your body will start to have symptoms of that, typically dizziness, nausea, are the typical symptoms. Your blood pressure can be low. You can pass out. You can start vomiting. It's a very, very uncomfortable sensation when it gets sort of severe. And we do see that a lot when it comes to the summertime. We have Martha from San Antonio. Are you there, Martha? Hello?
Yes, I am. Hello.
You're alive? Yes. I hadn't heard from you in so long. How have you been? Hello? Hello? Martha? Hello? All right. Maybe something happened there with Martha. Martha, please give us a call back. We have Cliff, line two. I guess program director. Hello, Martha?
Hey.
Hey.
How are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. What's going on?
Well, I'm just checking in. I hope it'll be a fairly simple question for you. My husband and I took a wonderful trip to France.
Yeah, and, heard about it.
And in order to get back in the country, of course, we had to take a negative COVID test. Well, he stayed positive for days, and I was always negative. So we finally made it back in Tuesday of this week, and all was good until yesterday when I woke up with the same symptoms that he had while we were in France. Congestion, headache, lethargy, aches, etc. I did COVID, the rapid test here at home. I've had now three of the four tests. I had one, what do you call that one, the PCR test. I had a PCR test too, and all of this has been in the, like, the last 30 hours. But three of the four have shown me to be positive, and I just got to believe I am because I'm exhibiting the same symptoms he has.
All right.
And my question to you is, are the rapid tests reliable enough that I can use those? I mean, I have heard some people say that the PCR test is the, quote, gold standard, and that's really the better test for you to take. But I got something. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but I'm not feeling real hot.
Yeah, you know, there's several variants of COVID virus. So we do know of patients getting two infections separated by time. So that is a possibility, obviously, with travel. The virus is still circulating, will continue to circulate. So we're still going to see COVID pop up here and there. It's just that we're not expecting these big surges anymore. And hopefully that doesn't happen. But with foreign travel, with interacting with people without masks, certainly you're exposed to COVID viruses and you might get a COVID infection. And from my standpoint, I would, consider that a positive test. You had three. I mean, three is a pretty good number and it's been consistent. You have symptoms. And so my pretest probability, as we call that, is very high that you probably have an active viral infection, probably with the COVID infection, and I would treat it as COVID-19 COVID-19. That's how I would approach that.
Dr. Levine, let me say, my husband and I both had our first two vaccinations, and then we've been boosted twice. We got boosted again before we left for France.
And thank you for that. And again, just to remind everyone, the vaccine does not prevent you from getting the infection. It only improves your chances of not getting severely ill with the infection, meaning you can stay at home. You can maybe treat it like you did years ago when you got a flu. You would just take some Tylenol and some Motrin, sit it out for a couple of days, and you're better. And so that's where the vaccine comes into play. You don't have to go to the hospital and be on a ventilator and all that stuff, which as of right now, based on what the experts are saying, the patients who are having to be hospitalized and put on ventilators from COVID-19 are still the unvaccinated. So that's why we still recommend vaccinations and boosters because we don't want you to have to come to the hospital. We don't want you to be on a ventilator. We just sort of want this to be a cold and sniffle sort of experience. You don't have to go to the hospital. You don't need oxygen. You don't have to lay in bed all day. You just sort of some colds and sniffles, you know, get some Tylenol, get some nose spray, hang out for a couple of days, and then go on with your life. And
my husband had the cold, like, and the sniffles and the allergies and all that kind of thing, and lethargy. That was really his problem, and headache. And then since mine started, my head's been pounding, and then I've been so, you can probably hear that I'm congested and achy and all that kind of stuff. And if COVID weren't around, I would think this was the good old fashioned flu. So I guess my next question for you is, should I go to my urgent care doctor today and get tested for flu to get them to get possibly give me an antiviral? Or, my birthday, I don't like to admit this, but my birthdays that could be considered, I may be getting old. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. We're getting old every day. Yeah, I mean, the flu, influenza A and B certainly could be a possibility. Yeah, no question. Go get checked. And the approach will be similar, though, if it's COVID or influenza. There is a specific tablet medication out there for COVID-19, but I don't know that you can get it anywhere. But yeah, you can always go and get tested. Just let them know, hey, I've tested positive for COVID. There might be some things that they process you differently if they put you over in a different room or something like that. You know, wear a mask. And yeah, you can go get checked out. Absolutely.
Hey, last question. Do you take out-of-town patients? I mean, if I wanted to switch to have you as my doctor in Beaumont, would you take me as a patient?
Absolutely. Be honored.
Well, yes, you better not say that because I'm not happy with my doctor here.
Right. Well, just let him know because we don't always know what people are thinking. So just let him know.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Martha. Get better. Take care.
Okay.
And we'll go on our last break. Phone lines are open. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Dr. Levine's Medical Hour on News Talk 560 KLVI. To join the conversation, call 896-KLVI or 800-330-KLVI.
All right. Welcome back. Cliff, you're online. Line one, Cliff.
We're going to take a look. Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yeah, real quick. We're at the end of the show. What's up?
Okay, real quick. This is a trip down memory lane. When I managed Piccadilly Cafeteria years and years ago, there was a good friend of mine come in every day, and there was this little kid followed behind him, and that was you.
Oh, yeah. I used to love going to Piccadilly at Parkdale Mall. Absolutely. I remember it very well.
Be sure and tell your daddy I said hello, sir.
We'll do it, brother. I loved it. We had good times
at
Piccadilly.
Man.
Yes, sir. You have a good day. Yeah, Piccadilly was a restaurant out here at Parkdale Mall. I'm right across the street from Parkdale Mall. My family, we used to go there every Wednesday religiously, and I used to get the same stuff every day. I still remember what I got at Piccadilly, so I appreciate that walk down memory lane, and I'm sad it's gone. I used to eat there all the time. Hey, James, line two. James.
Nice.
Yeah, real quick, at the end of the show, what's going on?
Hello. I ask you a fast little question here because I know it's a short time. I've already had my shot for that COVID. Can you get that injectable antibodies here if I come down with it?
You know, because things have slowed down so much, I'm not quite sure. I think at the height of the pandemic, medical facilities were stocking that antibody infusion. But because things are so quiet right now, I'm not quite sure what the availability is. I'm not even quite sure if people are still using the antibody infusion because just at the end, it was sort of falling out of favor. So you would probably have to ask around. I believe in the antibody infusion personally, but you would probably have to call around and see if that is available, James.
Well, okay. They had real good luck with it down in Florida.
Yeah.
And then
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my choice. I've had my shots, and that's what I wanted to see if I could, because I feel like I'll catch it sooner or later. But
yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Well, I'll let you go on. Thank you.
All right, James. Have a good day. I appreciate all the phone calls today. Again, colon cancer screening, that was sort of my topic for the day, age 45 and above, get your screening. If there's normal parameters, just get your little stool kit. It comes to your house, process it. However, if there's anything wrong, strong family history, bleeding, weight loss, anemia, loss of appetite, you need to go get your colonoscopy. Just ask your healthcare professional. Anyway, thanks for joining me. Drink your water, exercise, don't drink and drive, and we'll see you next week. Take care. God bless.